So welcome back to the Now Age podcast with me, Ruby Warrington. It's a big smile on my face today as I begin this introduction, as I'm sitting here with one of my very favorite people. It is the one and only Erin Rose. Hello, Erin.
Hi, Ruby. I'm so happy to be here.
I first met Erin, it feels like lifetimes ago, and it felt like that when we first connected. It was kind of like, oh yeah, there was Egypt, there was whatever else, there were the star colonies. but it was only around a year ago.
Yeah, just about. And it really does feel like we had lived lifetimes together before, and we have lived, I don't know, at least five or six in the last 18 months.
At least. So I first hired Erin. I'm going to have him tell you a bit more about his work in a moment. But I hired Erin when I was at a time when I was really having some very deep realizations about what's the actual underlying work that we're all here to do when we talk about healing. This was very much inspired by a lot of the reactions to the 2016 election, a lot of what we were seeing, a lot of the unrest that was occurring in the world. Particularly around racism, sexual inequality, LGBTQ issues, and just really kind of all of these issues being brought up to the forefront, so much of the pain that had been underlying for so long, waiting to be addressed, was very, very present for me, as I know it was for all of you listening here. And I was kind of really thinking about, well, what does this mean for the Numinous? Here's a platform that's kind of, you know, I created to be bringing ideas about wellness and healing on a spiritual, emotional level to people in a very accessible way. And how does that relate to these deep, deep, deep-seated wounds that we're all now being asked to connect to? And it really made me think about how, you know, underlying so much of our dis-ease, mental, emotional, physical also, and spiritual, is this deep wound of separation. And this separation from ourselves, the separation from each other, separation from the natural world, the separation from spirit, that ultimately manifests in all of these systems of oppression and divisiveness and hate that we see in the world, be it political scaremongering, media manipulation, be it institutionalized racism, hate groups, war. These I see now more and more as the kind of like human and physical manifestations of this deep wound that we all carry and are all suffering from on some level. And so Erin was somebody I began working with to help me make sense of what my role and the role of the Numinous could be in beginning to address some of these issues and really help to kind of grapple with and play a role in our collective healing on a much deeper level. So since then, we've become firm friends and comrades in arms.
Yes.
on this path, I would say. So Erin, could you just share with the listeners a little bit more about you, the work you do in the world, how we came to be working together, and a bit about your background and how you came into this kind of work also?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so beautiful to hear you speak all of that out, because we really have been in such a moment of shifting and really integrating this idea of the personal and the collective, making that journey from the personal wellness space and then connecting it with what feels like, you know, the harder reality of the current collective community situation, and applying the determination that we have to healing ourselves, and the determination of like, no, I am going to be happy, I am going to thrive, and bringing that to our larger vision for the world. So it was really beautiful to hear you speak that out. My work really began from the moment I showed up on this planet and in this lifetime, asking the question of why can't we all get along? I grew up in a family that is still healing from really big generational wounds, particularly around Catholicism and around just these distortions around love and what does it really mean to love and to connect and to embody those teachings. And so as someone who is gay and is transgender and has that as part of my experience, really had very many experiences of isolation, of dehumanization, of just feeling so separate and so other, and feeling so like, I know what love is. I know what, like, I have this intuitive sense of how things should be. You know, when you walk into a house and you're just like, that chair should be over there, or, you know, this should, you know, you just have that sense of something needing to be straightened or corrected. It was like, I know how it's supposed to feel, but and you're saying that you love me, and I'm seeing people talk about love, but I don't really feel it. And so my life has been this quest to figure out how to crack that code, and to figure out with this determination for love that I just somehow came here having in my heart, and I keep just putting my hand on my heart, truly not taking no for an answer in terms of the vision of how good it could be to be human on this earth in this lifetime. And so my work started in a pretty traditional place. I was a community organizer from the age of 14, 15. I was going around making presentations to my peers saying, we need to think globally and act locally. This is a big problem that's happening in the world. This is what you can do about it. And in those years of activism, it really honed my understanding of power. It honed my understanding of what my gifts were in terms of holding space for other people. And it's been quite a journey, just in the way that you talk about the numinous shifting. You know, my work has evolved as our understanding about why these problems are happening, why discrimination and violence across all of these different identities, or not even across identities, just human to human, you know, violence in any way, why is it happening? And so now my work manifests as really many different modalities all coming together to address this crisis of separation that we're in. And so that looks like working with companies on their culture, doing conscious culture design, saying, okay, you have these beautiful values. You say you're a family, you say you're for innovation or connection or whatever it is, all these amazing groups of people trying to do amazing things, but how do we actually make that the lived experience? Because that's also what I was seeing as an activist. It was like, we had this beautiful vision of how our world could be, but then we were still stressed out. Mm-hmm. We were still fighting, right? Mm-hmm. So how do we actually bring...
Still seeking power and creating hierarchical structures.
Yes. Mm. Big old capital, all capital letters, exclamation point, comic font, yes. And so there's that piece. And then there's the piece as well in some of the work that you and I were doing is really transformational coaching for public figures around up-leveling their voice for these times, right? Mm-hmm. Really understanding, out of all of the feedback that you get about care about this cause, say it this way, truly, what are you meant to speak on and what is your role in this collective healing process? How do you use your voice in a way that is for the highest good, that also really nourishes you and feels authentic to you? And so that's one way. That's, I always say, that's the story right now of what the work is, because it's always evolving. But the thing that drives it is this love for humanity and this knowledge that I'm not taking no for an answer. We absolutely can heal anything that's happening on the planet within our lifetime, and I'm here to do it.
I love it. And that was said with a big smile as well. And something I really do love about your work and your approach to this work is that you can be talking on and spend your life working in what can seem like the darkest corners, right? The sort of like most difficult, most painful parts of being human. And always with such optimism. You know, there really is that through line of like, we can work this out, and truly believing that, you know? And I wonder, like, are there any experiences in your life that have helped you to believe, or could you maybe share any kind of like times when, or just what helps you believe that? Like, what is it that makes you believe that we can work this out? Like, when it can seem so hopeless sometimes, and so often all roads lead back to, well, you know what, greed and competitiveness are just human nature, shit.
Yeah, I love that question. And yeah, there's perma smile on my face right now because I love this part of being human, of honoring our humanity and just loving it like someone you've been in a relationship with for 20 years and just being like, damn, you made a mess today, but like, I still choose you and I love you, and we're in this, and I wouldn't have it any other way, because I know that, you know, our liberation is tied up together. And, you know, the first thing that came through, because there's obviously so many stories of transformation that I've witnessed and also that I've had the privilege of just hearing from other people about. But the thing that gives me the most hope on a deep level is my own story. Right? Mm-hmm. I experienced a lot of discrimination and violence. And, you know, I think about the first really two decades of my life, there's just this heaviness, there's this darkness, there's this deep, deep sadness, just living with, still I had this optimism and people would have, you know, said, oh yeah, there's Aaron with a smile, you know, and I had that external shine still, but I was deeply struggling. And, you know, whether or not I was gonna, I had no vision beyond 20, 25. I had no idea what my life would look like. I had no expectation of surviving, and not even surviving the violence of the world, but surviving just the conditions of my own mind, just feeling like every day is so hard. I feel so oppressed. I feel so depressed. I feel completely hopeless and completely, you know, bombarded by negativity, even while I'm like, it has to be different. It has to be different. You know, just being basically permanently suicidal for 20 years, just feeling like, am I going to make it? Am I going to make it? And then rooting just through the grace of the divine and through, you know, whatever orchestration happened, many little things falling into place for me to come back to my truth, to root even deeper into my spiritual practices, and then to start to see, wow, life can be different, right? I'm someone who, you know, was almost one of those statistics of how, you know, what percentage of LGBTQ people, you know, die by a certain age and in what way. And now, like, I wake up every day, even if I'm stressed, even if I haven't slept a lot, even if there's something hard going on in my life, and I'm just like, wow, I love being alive. I love being human, and I just delight in the world. And so I think that knowing how dark it felt for me, and now knowing how much I 180'd that, it's like, anything's possible. And I think all of us maybe have someone, whether it's our ourselves or someone else that we've seen, where it's like, wow, if you can go from there to there, anything is possible.
Yeah.
And also, I'm here, I'm alive right now. I'm not willing to live however much longer I'm supposed to live in this lifetime telling a story that bums me out.
Or buying into a story that's designed to bum us all out.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Right. So it's like, yeah, you might think I'm crazy for saying that we're going to heal the world in this way and that we can completely transcend racism and transphobia and violence and abuse and epidemic disease, but like, why not? And right. Truly, we create our own realities, you know, to bring in that mystical perspective. And because we have been. We've been telling some very intense stories about how things are. Mm-hmm. And if we change that story about what's possible in the world, then it changes.
So you mentioned leaning into your spiritual practice, or I guess you said, you know, you have, for a large part of your formative years, been deconditioning yourself from the conditioning of the Catholic Church. So how did you come to a new spirituality, and what was your entry point into that becoming a more than a crutch, but actually a lifeline for you, I suppose?
Yeah, and just like capital L life.
Yeah.
You know, living life in communion with the divine, choosing to make everyday life sacred. Yeah, Catholicism was rough, I remember. To put it lightly.
A t-shirt, maybe.
Yeah, it's like 1,000 years, Catholicism has been rough for a lot of people. And I also just want to bring in, and this is, I think, a feature of my work more and more, is that there's always the, you know, there's the polarity, the duality, the caveat, which is to say that I had a very intense experience growing up, and I also honor my parents for doing absolutely the best that they could, and I honor them for, you know, however much I felt like my pain was caused by them and them making me go to church and various things that happened. I can see now that, you know, that system was hurting them just as much as it was hurting me. And so I just like to always bring that in, that awareness. And I remember even being 3-4 years old and singing my own songs in church. I remember looking up, I have this image of looking up at this big church in Brooklyn and singing Twinkle Twinkle Little Star. Just like, I am bringing my own frequency into this space. And this is the song.
Speaking to the cosmos, yeah. Like from the word go, twinkle, twinkle, little star.
Exactly. And just, you know, feeling that resistance to the energy there. And for years I fought it, and I was so mad. You know, my mom would say, I see Jesus in you. You know, I see his love in you. And I would be like, you know, I associated all Jesus and all of his teachings with just nothing but negativity. And, you know, I had my atheist phase where I was just like, nothing is real. And casually, and I really rooted into like politics and science. And then ultimately that fixation with the material world wasn't serving me. And also, I've got this innate wonder the way all of us do. I look at a flower and I'm just like, oh my gosh, flower, like, thank you for existing. And I know for some people it's very like, you know, tree hugger, whatever, but there is so much beauty in this world. And I never stopped seeing that. And I never stopped connecting with it. And so I think as I healed and began to forgive my family and began to forgive everything I had been through, the space opened up again for that communion with the divine that didn't require me to say, don't say God, don't say spirit, don't say all these specific words because they trigger me. And just to kind of let the frequency come in. And, you know, even when I was 18 years old, which was still very much in the darkest phase, Buddhist meditation came to me. And so I began to meditate. And that was really the start for me in some ways. But in another way, you know, I was reading Harry Potter and just looking up at the stars when I was 12 years old, just thinking about how magical the world is. And so in some ways, the thread has been very consistent. But now it's really a disciplined choice to never go back, to really live in that communion with the sacred and with the awesome, like the awe-inspiring things in life.
The numinous.
Every day. The numinous,
yeah.
Exactly.
I often say, you know, when people ask me, what does numinous mean? I'm like, this kind of means awesome, but like in a biblical sense, but without bringing the Bible into it.
Yeah.
Kind
like,
of.
Like the original G-O-D.
Yeah.
Before the stories were written.
Exactly, exactly. So let's talk a little bit about this separation.
Yeah.
You know, this deep, deep wound that we hear about sometimes when we kind of are thinking about the more ancient spiritual texts, like even the word yoga, for example, meaning union, suggesting that there is a separation and that we need a practice such as yoga to bring us back into union with the oneness, with the universe, with the numinous, with the divine. So I guess, yeah, I would love to hear in your kind of words what your spiritual studies and your personal journey and the work that you do, how that all kind of comes together to help us think, to help us believe in the idea of a oneness when we see so much separation and divisiveness in the world. Like, how do you sort of conceptualize the oneness, or how does that come through in your work?
That's a beautiful question. And in some ways, it is the numinous, right? It is just this sense that we are not separate, right? This sense that, like, that is why in some ways, if you think about it, if even if you're listening, you just have this reaction of, but what about this? But what about genocide? But what about those people? Why are you so upset about that, right? You're upset about it because of the effect it's having on your own life, because of the violence you're experiencing. But also there's a deep, deep feeling of existential injustice to the separation. It's like, this is not how it's supposed to be. And to me, that speaks to the oneness. It speaks to this sense of like, this just, I don't know what it is, but this isn't right. This whole you're over there and I'm over here thing. And when we have those moments of union, it's why falling in love is so amazing, because you're just like, oh my God.
And so romanticized.
Literally.
Yes.
Because
we want to believe it, right? Yeah.
Completely. And it's like, oh, there's that frequency. That's who I am. That I see you. And even though you didn't wash the dishes for 24 hours and you haven't quite manifested your full potential in your career and you have morning breath, you're literally exquisite and I would do anything for you. And that is our, I truly feel and believe that that is our essential nature as human beings. We're given these gifts, these moments where we connect, or even a moment connecting in nature where you're lying in, for me, it's always a body of water, although sometimes it is, you know, lying in the forest as well, where you just feel connected. And we seek that feeling. We seek that in oblivion through drugs because we're trying to go back to a feeling of not being separate anymore. We seek it in so many ways. And so that seeking to me speaks to that sense that we all have.
Yeah.
That we're one.
An inner knowing that's unconscious. Yeah, exactly. It's making me think about, I'm currently reading The Untethered Soul.
Yes.
And there's lots that I don't like about it, actually, in terms of the way that it's written. And lots of it's not really addressing things in a way that I necessarily find that helpful. However, that said, it's a wonderful book and definitely check it out. But I've been reading a part where he talks about pain, the pain that we feel. The pain when we see an injustice in the world and it makes us angry, the fact that it's triggering such a response in us is a clue or a hint to the fact that it's actually triggering a deep pain that we hold ourselves. And I think that's what you were just speaking to. So even if someone gets angry, oh, this is ridiculous. How can you talk about oneness? Look at racism is racism and it's just fucked up.
Yeah.
We need to talk about that and we need to be really angry about that. Even if you're getting angry at the person who's saying, we can heal from racism. It's again, it's another clue that the deep pain of the separation of racism is being triggered in anyone who's having a reaction to it. Yeah,
completely. And I just had this moment. I was like, is this the point in the conversation where we're just going to model like feeling that deep emotion, you know, where, cause it just hit me like that primal cry that we all have of just, this isn't okay. This isn't okay. This isn't okay. And I don't know if we want to go down this rabbit hole, but from another perspective, the separation as well is that we are eternal spiritual beings in whatever way you conceive of that. And we are currently embodied on earth, which is a separation from that, which we cannot see. Mm. Right. And there's whether it's quantum physics or, many different perspectives, we're mapping the space between us and we're seeing that it's not space, mm-hmm. right? But from our current five senses, it looks like space.
Mm. Having a physical body
exactly.
in a way separates me from, so which is why I think so many of these issues come back down to identity, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And embodiment, just literally what's happening with the body.
Yeah. Very interesting. So I like to think of you as a kind of millennial Marianne Williamson.
Wow. Thank you. I'll receive that.
In that, you know, you sort of merge the spiritual and the political in this kind of a way, which I don't see modeled that often. Mm. You know, I see the spiritual and the scientific, perhaps, or the spiritual and the psychological, but marrying the spiritual with the political, I think, is so necessary as we move through these very troubling times politically. What do you think about Marianne Williamson for president?
I love it. I think the first thing that comes through is that I honor her. I honor her vision. I think there are many people that are incredibly surprised that she's made it as far as she has. Mm. There are many people who have subtle, very subtle critiques of her and her politics and her work. But, you know, it's amazing when you hear something over and over again and it feels like a cliche and then it lands for you. Brené Brown's work, quoting this Teddy Roosevelt quote about, you know, the honor really goes to the person who's in the arena, who's face down in the arena doing it. And so I really...
getting the ass kicked.
Exactly. And I really honor her for showing up and being in that space and holding that vision and just being like, I am going in with a completely different energy than what politics is.
Yeah.
And I am not compromising at all. And she did a little bit of compromising in her 2014 her legislative run. And she spoke about that, saying, I took a little bit of the political advice, but now I'm holding a completely different vision for how politics could be. And I think that she's bringing in this frequency of love, this love as a revolutionary agent of change and not this cheesy thing, the love that Martin Luther King Jr. spoke about, agape, this sense of brotherly love, of love. You know, he spoke about, I don't have to like you, but I love you in the way that I know that God loves you.
Mm-hmm.
And that unification, it's really, you can't deny that feeling in your heart of that hope and of that connection. And so I'm excited that she is showing up and modeling what it looks like to do something that people don't believe you can do and to enter something that people have condemned and to say, maybe this is condemned, but while it's here, I'm going to shift
it. While it's here, let's at least look at the possibilities. I love this idea. I mean, something, the word, this, you know, the phrase that's kept coming to me throughout our conversation is just unconditional love. Like, that's ultimately what it is, right? Love without conditions. I hate you and I love you. I have been taught to hate you and I love you anyway. And just holding that as like the kind of baseline, right? And that's, in a way, a union with the divine. If we can get on board with the idea of the divine as kind of like just love consciousness, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So this idea of an unconditional love, I think, is definitely something I, as someone who's chosen not to have children, for example, I'm very aware that I have this kind of channel of just unconditional love that I can give to other beings. You know, I can give it to you, Aaron. I can give it to you, my cat, Larry. I can give it to everybody listening, you know?
And totally. Which
I'm also aware is like a super utopian way of looking at things. Me, particularly me as a thin, educated British white woman, it's not necessarily enough for me to say, but I'll just love everybody unconditionally and that's my work in the world. Mm. So can we talk a little bit about, you know, what we can actually begin to do physically in this physical reality to begin to repair some of these separation wounds in ways that go beyond anything like tokenism, in ways that actually really have the resonance of unconditional love, but are actually actions in the world?
A beautiful question. And I think, you know, we have this critique, what's coming through right now is this critique of this idea of thoughts and prayers, right? Every time, you know, we have something horrifying happen, you see politicians say thoughts and prayers with these people, and people say, you know, screw your thoughts and prayers. There's not substance there. And what I actually argue and truly believe is that if you are truly, truly embodying the unconditional love frequency, that is enough, because it will move you to act and it will be doing that repair. Mm. Right? There's this idea in Buddhism and in many other concepts, A Course in Miracles as well, which is, I'm also a student of, that there's really no neutrality, right? You can't wish someone neutral. If you're not actively wishing them well, some part of you is wishing them harm. Some part of you is feeling in a scarcity dynamic where you're thinking, well, maybe if they have a little bit less, I'll have a little bit more of whatever it is. And so really, I want to honor the power of intention and of our hearts, which are, to bring in a little science, at least 60 times more electromagnetically powerful than our brains, that vibe with the entire frequency of the planet as demonstrated by science, and that literally change the environment around us. When people gather together and they meditate together, violent crime rates around that meditation go down, right? Mm-hmm. And so honoring the power of our heart, but also being militant and like relentless about our embodiment of that, and saying, you know, is what part of me feels like love is a little bit passive and it's just like, you're amazing, right? Rather than the love, that motherly, that familial, you know, I am enraged by your any amount of dishonor that you have experienced, and I'm on the mat with you. Love moving us to act in that way. And so I think there is this energetic piece, which I speak about a lot. You know, people will call me, for those people who are scandal fans, sometimes I joke that I'm like the Olivia Pope of online social justice call outs, where it's like, you've been called out, give Aaron a call and he'll support you. But it's not. And some people come to me and they're like, what's the right thing to say? And I'm like, it's not about what to say. It starts with you getting back into integrity and feeling through using these wellness modalities, whether it's breath work or sound healing or meditation or a shamanic journey, and going into the dynamic that's showing up. So for example, for me as a man in interactions, in these archetypal interactions with women, right? There's a piece, which we'll talk about in a second, of the literal physical things I can do in the world to change it, but also we have the effect moving out in the world of violence, of dehumanization, when we still have the thought in our minds, right? It always originates back to the thought. And so what part of me is still thinking, oh, I bet that woman's the intern and not the woman I'm having a meeting with? What part of me is like, oh, interesting, like I'm seeing this person who's usually really done up and now they're not, or whatever. Just even these little things that we say, oh, it's not that bad.
Right? We may not even notice until we get super aware, unconscious. Exactly. We may not even notice those little thoughts are coming in. Yeah.
Exactly. And so just starting to bring that awareness to where am I still operating on this autopilot distortion that dehumanizes the other person and then also dehumanizes me in that kind of reciprocal energy. And so sometimes it is that small thing, and sometimes it really is, you know, who are the women that trigger me? Who are the women that I'm in conflict with? What would happen if I really tapped into that love frequency and felt their pain and let it move through me and honored the depth of the emotion, right? Particularly in that gender dynamic, that's a huge reset, is even just not minimizing even by 5%. And so there's that piece of truly looking at the emotions behind your actions and not turning away from the pain, and even literally sending love, right? There are people in my life who for a long time I was like, I love them, but they're over there and I'm not going to deal with them right now. And then everything began to shift when I went from just that kind of holding myself like this, just holding myself and putting my hands sort of just in front of my chest, like, they're over there, we're not having any negative energy exchange, so they're fine. But then actually opening my heart and saying, in that Buddhist metta loving kindness practice, I honor myself and I love myself, and, you know, may I be happy, may I be healthy, may I be safe, may I be at peace, and then sending that to them as well. And so there's the energetic piece, and then we can get into the sort of the more practical piece, but there's so much power to our intention, because otherwise sometimes our intention is just, I don't want to be in trouble anymore.
Yeah.
We need our intention to be, I want to experience, I mean, I'm just going to put it out there, I want to experience the ecstasy of and peace and transcendence of that true unconditional love frequency with absolutely everybody, because that would be amazing if I let my ego take a chill pill and not worry about what would happen if I liked that person.
Exactly. And it goes from being kind of like defensive, fear-based kind of quote unquote help to actually genuinely kind of, which brings it back full circle to what I was saying in the beginning, you know, the healing work that we're here to do in the world, it has to begin inside. And that, what you just described is that healing piece. It's like looking at where am I still holding a violent thought? You know, how can I work with that before I actually begin to do any work with people out in the world?
Completely. And I've, even before taking any action, I see things shift all the time with clients where it's like, maybe there's a particular identity group that they're navigating. Maybe it's along lines of race or gender or even ethnicity or language, or there's just someone in their mind where they're just like, I feel like they don't like me. And I feel like their group is not part of my group. Right. And when we do this, and we even just sit in meditation for 10 minutes and we just soften our hearts and we're just like, I wish them the best. I wish them the best. How they behave has no impact on me, but I wish them the best.
And truly mean it, though. And it's truly one thing to think that and go, I'm going to send this to you, but actually truly feel and mean that, because you recognize we are one, yeah?
Exactly. And that's, you know, the metta loving kindness meditation in Buddhism starts with, you say it to yourself, and then you call to mind someone that you deeply love to get you in that frequency. I often suggest people do it with their pets, because it's that like, oh my God, you're the
best. It's just easy to feel, you know, the feeling,
like,
yeah.
And then you feel it and you're like, whoa, okay, I'm going to give this to someone. And in some ways, you know, too, you can see it as the other is you and you're the other. You're sending it back to yourself. What you put out in the world touches you first and last. And so even if you're holding justified frustration and justified, well, that's just how they do things and this is just how I do things and I'm doing everything right and I don't know why they're critiquing me, does that feel good in your body? Would it feel better just to feel love, right? And to walk that path of releasing that pain and that resistance is scary, right? Because to get to love is to surrender to seeing everything that is not love come up and out like a, you know, multi-generational exorcism. But liberation lies on the other side, and that's what I'm here for.
Yeah.
So let's go.
That. Let's go. So we'll definitely get to generational mass exorcism in a second.
Great.
But while you were talking, I was scrolling through my phone, as you saw. You reminded me of a little a snippet. This is something I kind of clipped on my phone from an article I was reading in the Sunday Times, and I read to participants on the last retreat that I read, where we were closing out with a story sharing circle. And it was a therapist who's written a book about what it's like to work as a therapist, because she said, you know, people always, when they find out what I do, they always want to know, because I think we're all actually deeply fascinated by what goes on in those rooms where there's real space for vulnerability and real empathy and sharing, right? And this is, I just love this. This is a quote from her piece. She says, a supervisor once told me, there's something likable in everyone. And to my great surprise, I found that she was right. And it will make me cry when I read this, I'm pretty sure.
Wonderful. Let's let it out. Mars in Cancer.
All right. It's impossible to get to know people deeply and not come to like them. We should take the world's enemies, get them in a room to share their histories and formative experiences, their fears and their struggles, and global adversaries would suddenly get along. I found something likable in literally everyone I've seen as a therapist, including the guy who attempted murder.
Wow.
You know, and I think that so much of, and this is something that comes up for me all the time and something I'm going to be addressing probably with my next book, is that that shit takes time.
It does.
We need to take the time to sit and be with people and listen and share and like feel each other's experience. So we're never going to really be able to get to that space. You know, if we're always, if we're spending all of our time chasing the next thing, posting the next Instagram meme, getting the next barrage of likes, whatever it is, launching the next business, we're never going to have the time to really do this deep communing, which is ultimately where the healing is. You just came from a weekend of that, though, didn't you?
I did. Yes, the Aniwa gathering of 40 Indigenous elders from all over the world, unprecedented amount of Indigenous elders flying. I mean, just from all corners of this earth to come together and to share wisdom and to connect and to truly do that cross-cultural healing and to embody the diversity of this planet in a healed and whole way.
Mm. I would love if you could share just a little. I mean, I think something that is particularly present for me and for so many of us, thankfully, at the moment, is just how we can even begin to start making amends for some of the deep atrocities that have been done to the planet and to the Indigenous peoples. And I wonder if there was anything that came up from the weekend around that. I'm pretty sure that there was. I would love if you could just share any insights you got around that.
Absolutely. And I think that what's coming through first is just that recognition of the timing piece that you were speaking to. And what I was hearing as you were saying that as well is it takes a lot of time, but it takes a lot more time not to do it.
Right.
It takes a lot more time.
Yeah.
You know, if you've ever just run around stressed trying to do a million things at once, or you've just been worrying about doing something for a long time and then you just do it and you're like, oh, that took me 15 minutes. Like, I spent 3 weeks of my life avoiding it and I blocked out my whole day and now it's 9:15 and I'm done. What do I do with my, and you just feel light. Right. And so that, I think, is really informs my work is, and I had to act as if at first, truly, I had to act as if I had to take this risk on the idea that my liberation was tied up in me loving the people who had deeply, deeply harmed me. And I had to take the risk that I would go into those depths and that I would come out again. And that's scary, especially when you're like, when you've done the personal healing work to a certain level where you're like, well, I'm not feeling like I'm on, like, I feel like I'm 5 inches away from the precipice now. You want me to go back down there? And so just honoring that and honoring that part of it is that, you know, if you're already relentlessly committed to telling a story about how messed up things are, how can you take that relentless commitment and put it towards the idea that you deserve better and that there might be a way through? And so
that
for whatever reason,
better. Yeah,
completely. And so for whatever reason, I felt like I needed to say that first, because I think that there's this balance for whoever's listening is, you know, as a white man, but also as a person who's in the LGBTQ community and has that experience, there's this balance where I've experienced a lot of harm and I have a lot of privilege. And I know that there are people listening who are coming from multiple perspectives who might be thinking, oh, from one side, I need to be softening into, you know, even opening up the possibility that someone who looks like the person who harmed me could actually just meet me with love. Right. And to be able to receive that and to give that gift to yourself on that side, and then also to step into really repairing when you've been on the more powerful side of of that oppressor oppressed dynamic. So I sort of wanted to just to speak that in.
Thank you. That's so important to acknowledge. Yeah,
absolutely. So Aniwa. Yeah. So really, it was 0 to 60 the moment I got there. And the theme, there were so many themes that came through, but one of the strongest ones was this idea of repayment, this idea of balance, right? And we have this inherent balance in the natural system. When we don't tamper with native forest, so much biodiversity just completely coexists. Those stinging nettles are taking care of that caterpillar, and that weed is making sure that that tree gets what it needs, and that little, you know, it's all working together. You know, that vulture who we think is scary is actually keeping everything clean by taking care of the waste. You know, it's all this beautiful balanced system. And so in order to keep that balance when it's already healthy, what I was receiving a lot from my work and validated from these elders from all over the world was, we make these daily payments. We say thank you to the water. I mean, we say thank you every time before we drink. We say thank you to the earth. We say thank you to the sun. And we give our energy and our love back because it's giving to us, right? So that kind of figure eight, that infinity symbol of the giving and receiving and being a good steward does not mean self-flagellating and being like, water, I am not worthy, you know, thank you. It's just
sure
like,
I'm so sorry for polluting you or for drinking you.
Just for drinking you. Water's like, that's what I'm here for, bro. Yeah. But it would love some love in return, you know?
Yeah.
And so, and also when we love something, when we are in that frequency, it's impossible. If you're really in that frequency, it's impossible to do harm, right? How could you harm something that you have a daily loving relationship with? And that you know you're conscious of how it's sustaining you. So that is the foundation. Mm. And then the acknowledgement of the deep imbalance that has occurred with the natural world and with human beings and this need for reparations, right? This need for those of us who are embodied as people who were the colonizers, who have been on the oppressor side of the oppressed-oppressor dynamic, that no matter what's actually in your family tree, no matter... Yeah, really, no matter who exactly your ancestors were, how you're embodied right now, there's this opportunity to do that repair. So as a white person, this opportunity to, both with my energy, to make true apologies, and then to literally redistribute resources. And not in this way where it's like, oh, I have so much, I'm going to give some charity, or I'm guilty, I need to give it back. It's like rebalancing for the sake of the highest good, and with the humility of knowing that you have more than you should have. And that came through very strongly from many of the elders, and they spoke just very simply about, we need to make this true apology. And I actually had a couple of opportunities to do that, where particularly right now we're on Lenape land here in New York City, and we were in Massachusetts as well. And there's a grandmother there from the Lenape tribe, and I was able just to go up to her and say, are you open to having a conversation with me? And she said yes. And I said, I just want you to know that I've lived on your land my whole life, and I just felt into my heart, and I said, and I'm really sorry, and I see you, and I acknowledge you, and I thank you for trusting me enough to even talk to me, and I love you. And she received it, and we hugged, and there was a little bit of an energetic completion there. And then the work comes in of the material reparations, right? How can I structure my business so that a percentage of what I'm making is always going back to other humans as this rebalancing. For those of us who are white people, particularly in America, there's a massive debt owed to indigenous people as well as to African Americans and people who have that lineage of enslavement here. And it can feel so intense, right? The energy is like, whew, whoa, Aaron's dropping all these words, oppressor, oppressed, violator, victim. Whoa, this feels like a lot, right? But we can just take that next right action. This is work that I've been doing for a long time, and I'm still doing it every day. I'm like, how do I rebalance more? How can, as I continue to heal, I have even more love to give, right? I can show up even more vulnerably. And even when we think about, you know, the Me Too movement and things like that, there's this opportunity that if you are embodied as someone who's seen as more privileged, to seize that opportunity and seize the responsibility to reset the pattern, to think about what is that pattern? The pattern with indigenous people and me as a white man is that basically I take everything that belongs to them and I completely disrespect them, and then I probably build a business based on what they shared with me. how can I not do that, right? How can I just be aware of, okay, that's how it would usually go. Mm. How can I go with only things to give and just be grateful for anything that comes back? As a man, if there's a woman that I'm interacting with and she's like, I'm really upset, how can I know that maybe there's a pattern as a man that I'm, my instinct is like, maybe you're 85% upset. Maybe you're 75%. Maybe I think 75% is like a logical amount for you to be emotional right now. So if you'll meet me at 75, then we can have a conversation.
Then
I'll validate you, right? Instead just being like, I'm so sorry you feel that way or whatever it is, and just witnessing.
What do you need?
And exactly, just, and slowing down enough. Because when we actually slow down, like any natural system in these beautiful little biological human suits we're in, we seek equilibrium as well. If we slow down enough, I was drawn to Aniwa, right?
Mm.
I am drawn to situations. I have situations all the time where I have the ability to say, I'm really sorry to someone on behalf of myself individually or on behalf of a group. And, you know, in some ways we can strategize, but in other ways we can just say, okay, I'm ready. Like, let's see what comes in, and to slow down enough to not have to impose a strategy on it, while also taking it very, very seriously and seizing the opportunities as they come up and not seeing anything as too small.
Yeah.
Right? Because I could have said, oh, grandmother Clara Soaring Hawk, like she doesn't care about me.
What difference is it going to make me saying this to her? Yeah.
But it made a big difference, right? And that we established that relationship at the beginning of the weekend, and at the end she gave me her card. And she said, you know, she said, I want to speak to you about how you can support us. Right. And so now we're building that relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. I love that. And I, like you said, exactly. It's like, it's that thing almost of looking at the whole of the hate all in one place. It can feel extremely scary, extremely overwhelming, very heavy when we think about where do I even begin? Well, where do you begin? Like, one step.
Exactly.
One apology. One helping hand. That's all it can be.
Completely. Because all we have is this now moment too. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing that was beautiful to hear reflected from so many traditions around the world, is that, you know, we got this sweet little linear time thing going on right now, but it's not really real. And so what's happening in the past is happening now. That's why it hurts so much.
Mm.
That's why I still see, there's a part of me when I see a black man walk towards me on the street, that no matter how much deconditioning I've done, there's still a part of me that I'm still working on healing that makes that feel a little bit confrontational, right? Even if the confrontation is, oh, I hope he doesn't think I'm a bad white person.
Yeah.
I love you.
Yeah.
Right. Whatever it is. And I'm trying to put out as many examples as possible here because I think it's really helpful to think about all these little ways these autopilot dehumanization patterns show up. So all we have is now, but when we make that repair, when we say, truly, I'm so sorry for what you've experienced, and this is how, and I'm listening to what you need in order to feel complete, because that's also the energy of an amend, right? Is to fully repair, is to undo the cause, and to say, to be humble, to not try to control and say, so my reparations plan for you is 5% over this many years. And, you know,
which again is the patriarchal mindset of, I know best what you need.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so we can listen to people who say it's money.
Mm-hmm.
We can also listen to people who say, you know, one of the women that I spoke to was like, you're doing it. You're here. We're complete. Like, thank you so much for being here. And she was kind of like asking me to step out of that energy of apology and just to be like, we're healed. Let's co-create together now.
Right.
And so really knowing that what you do in this moment, you do on behalf of your entire lineage, it clears it. It clears it all the way back, because you're resetting the pattern. And you see that in science, you see it in many different perspectives. And then the last thing that was coming in was just, I was seeing littering when you were speaking before, right? Where we think, oh, environmentalism is such a big problem, but I'm already doing so much. So like, let me just get Uber Eats for the third time today and just throw it in the trash. And like, I usually recycle, or these ways that we kind of like downgrade ourselves back out of convenience or out of overwhelm, when all we really have to do is just move slow enough to set an intention every time we take an action that's aligned with who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's less mess to clean up, and then it gets easier and easier and easier.
Mm. And I think that's what I was getting to. It's kind of like, if you tackling this, that's, again, I don't really like that word, but approaching this an opening to this with that one step at a time, one action at a time mentality, slowly, 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 it becomes second nature or first nature or original nature,
exactly.
Even. And it doesn't seem like this is this huge, overwhelming task that I'm like, that I'm now in. This is just who I am.
Absolutely. And I really stress to people that the opportunity to make it a daily practice, right? Especially if you already have some daily spiritual practice, even if you're doing your affirmations and you're like, I am whole and complete, I love my mom, whatever it is, everything's okay, I have enough money in my bank account, whatever it is, put on there. I live on a healed and whole planet where all beings thrive together. The air everyone breathes is clean. It's so amazing that we were able to replenish our aquifers in just 5 years or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Speaking that out, or if you're doing a meditation practice, offering the beautiful energy that you've created and just sending it out. And it doesn't have to be some very technical thing.
Mm.
The power of your imagination is enough. Mm-hmm. Just whoever's coming to mind, just put your hand on your heart and just think of them positively.
Yeah, exactly. And I like the fact that you reinstated there's no right or wrong way to do that. It's almost like the intention for that to be part of your meditation practice is enough. And just trust then that it's happening.
Yeah. And don't shy away where if there are these moments of tension and conflict, or you're like, you are seeing shifts in the world, but then there's this area where it's not shifting, leaning into that discomfort. And also, I think I always feel like a doctor when I say this, where I'm like, this is the side effect of the thing I'm recommending, which is that when we make a really big, intense commitment to love, all that is not love comes up and out. It's kind of like a little bit of energetic food poisoning. And so sometimes we can feel like, wait, I just listened to this podcast and I was so inspired. And then I did a meditation. I sent love to every being I've ever harmed. And then like this person yelled at me. And then three people from my past came back and they told me that I was a horrible person. And then I got fired or what, you know.
And
what?
I got called out on social media and now I feel super vulnerable and like I have zero skin on my body and
Totally. And just knowing that it's part of the process that there's... that you've asked for this, and so you're going to see a lot of what isn't what you asked for
as a reminder,
and also as, you know, you're seeing them out the door, right? You're seeing them out the door with a new energy of, you know, this dynamic isn't part of my reality anymore, but I have to attend to it. And so just trusting that anything that does come up doesn't mean that we're doomed and that the optimism is faulty, but that actually it means you set a really powerful intention. You got a lot of love in there. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of not love coming out to get cleared.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit then again about this this mass generational exorcism. Is that what you called it? I've been thinking a lot recently, and it's just come up in various talks I've done about how we really are this kind of like the generations born in this transition from age of Pisces into age of Aquarius, which I'm kind of like in my mind, how is anyone born between, say, 1950 and 2050?
Yes.
We're this kind of like hump generation or this kind of shoulder generation who are literally opening, we're tasked with opening the door or building the bridge or whatever kind of, however we want to visualize it, into a new paradigm and a new way of it coexisting as humans on this planet.
Yeah.
And as such, I sort of see we're part of the like generational cleanup crew, some people say, but I like to think of us as pattern breakers.
Mm.
Like when you described these shifts in our perspective and our ways of being can occur very rapidly, actually, once we bring our conscious awareness to it. It's only because no one's done that for like 500 years that it seems like it's going to be an arduous task. But now we're actually paying attention and we're bringing our conscious awareness to it, then maybe it can be a very rapid turnover.
Completely.
Can you speak a little bit to that idea of us being together collectively, like called to shift, create this shift, bring about this shift?
Yeah. So I've got the full body chills of confirmation, which is always a good sign. And actually what's coming through first is thinking about how chaotic things are and how that's a macro example of everything that I just said about what happens on an individual level.
Right. Yes.
We can look at it and be like, oh my God, things are horrifying. And I want to honor wherever anybody who's listening right now, whether it's in this now moment in 2019 or 5 years in the future or wherever you are, like you're with us right now. If you're feeling despair and you're feeling overwhelmed or like you've been really deeply affected by violence in your day-to-day life, just honor, I just want to honor that pain and to also to then zoom out and say, you know, with, you know, good old DT being elected president of these United States and, these other really intense, you know, the mass shootings, the just people being torn apart across voting lines, all of this, you know, this rise in anti-Black violence, everything that's happening, in some ways, I truly see it as we're getting this really good look, and me too, all of it, we're getting this really good look at everything that happened so that we can deal with it. And it's being served up to us on a platter based on our extremely powerful intention to experience something different. And so I feel that so, so deeply. And so I see it as, you know, there's a way that I sort of joke and things like that and put these little moments of levity in, because what we're talking about is seriously serious, mm-hmm. right? It is, it's the fate of humanity, mm-hmm. nothing less. And
because throw in climate change on top of all of that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But it's, in some ways, you know, we're Marie Kondoing this entire situation. We're saying, does this bring me joy? If not, there's going to be a massive trash pile in my hallway for a month while I'm cleaning this house. And we have an opportunity. And to me, it excites me, right? It's like, this is what I'm here for. This is why I'm alive, to experience this transformation and to experience, you know, it's really nice to have a nice meal, but it's tastes a lot better when you went on a really long hike, right? And this part of the human experience is this duality, is this tension of the satisfaction of every day. In some ways, I feel like I'm a little, you know, not to use a metaphor that is perhaps a bit old paradigm and colonial, a little gold miner, where I'm like, each new day, I'm like, ooh, a little bit more humanity, a little bit more humanity, a little bit more humanity. And I look for it and I allow that momentum to build. And so truly, anyone who's listening, if you're listening right now, this is, you're called to this, right? You're part of this. There's no way to escape it. Even the monks who are in their caves, who haven't talked to anybody in 20 years, they're holding down that love frequency for us. They're supporting us. But if we have tension in our relationships right now, and whoever's been coming up while you're listening to this as well, that's where you start, right? Even if you're like, I don't want to, I want to find a better person to start with, or a better dynamic to start with, or an easier one. Whatever's coming up is your path. And it's just, it's asking for you to say yes. And in my experience, the joy is exponential, right? This feeling of, the more I dig into what's bad about humanity, the more I get to see the breakthroughs, probably in the same way that people love being surgeons, where they're like, it's really messy, but then I see someone come back to life, right? And it's, we're shifting and we're saying that there are all these stories, that's just how it is, right? Or these ways that we even diminish ourselves. We use these words, we say, oh, I'm trash, right? That's trash. Or that person's canceled, or I'm the worst, right? You see a friend and you're 5 minutes like, oh, I'm the worst, right? What are you speaking into existence about who you are? Mm. And say, oh, you know, men are just like that. You can honor the part of yourself that's like, it does feel like men are just like that, because I have yet to see an example of a man not being like that. But I also know that it's possible, and I'm asking to be shown that it is. And I'm asking for the willingness, just even starting with that willingness. I'm willing to be willing to have a new experience and to open my heart. And for me, it's just been nothing short of transformational in my life as well as my clients' lives. What happens when we start to romance that joy and to start to say, you're welcome here, right? To start to say, ooh, if I were to tell a different story, what would it be, right? If I were brave enough, like radical enough, truly, it's very like punk in some ways. It's just like, we're going to win. It's all going to be okay if we decide.
Punk, but it's like, because what I'm getting is such a softening. It's like a soft punk.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, not soft.
It's countercultural.
Rock, like,
yeah.
It's countercultural. It's punk in that it's radical and there's a softness. Because it's about opening your heart. It's about taking down the barriers, like seeing the barriers, feeling the pain, and then choosing to breathe and open and remove those barriers.
Yeah. And also there's that compassion for self too. Like, as I heard you take that, yeah, that deep breath, it's amazing that we're all here to do this. It's incredibly intense because it's mental calisthenics to look at the horror of the world and to look through it and to know what lies on the other side and to say, no, I deserve that. And the same way that when we break up with a partner and we're like, I deserve better. I haven't seen better.
Yeah.
I haven't seen better except maybe on that one movie, but that was still kind of yeah, messed up and it was a little patriarchal and whatever. But I just know that this isn't working for me and I'm just willing to fling myself into into the unknown on the chance that it could be better.
Yeah. Erin, to finish up, I'd love if you could share a little bit about the rainbow prophecy.
Yes.
That you learned more about at Aniwa, I believe. And that feels very fitting considering we are having this conversation at the beginning of Pride Month.
You're right.
Right?
It is June.
It's June.
Here we are.
Yeah.
So there's many different versions of the rainbow prophecy. The one that's quoted the most is from the Hopi people. Mm. And I'll just say up front that I encourage anybody who's listening to go, you know, give it a good old-fashioned Google and start to hear it in the words of the indigenous people who've been speaking it out and sharing it. So I'm not even going to try to quote it, but my interpretation of it is truly that medicine of the rainbow, medicine of the diversity of Earth. That's the other thing, is this planet, despite how hard it is right now, there is so much good here, right? The diversity of this planet is absolutely astounding. And it truly is the Garden of Eden, right? It truly is this rainbow blend of abundance, of harmony. And so the rainbow prophecy speaks of people from every different color, every different tribe, every different place across the earth at a time when the earth is in deep peril, when it has never been worse, that they will come together and birth a new paradigm, and that they will bring together all of their teachings and truly birth a new age, right? At this moment, it feels like the precipice of things have never been worse. And then we come together in our full humanity and we restore this peace on earth. Mm. And so for me, it's an incredibly inspiring time to be alive. And I just feel called again just to say that every little piece that anyone does has an exponential ripple effect. If you have a family where there's just been nothing but pessimism, there's no reason to hope, we're doing our best, I can't do more, and you amp your hope up 10%, thank you for your contribution, yeah, right? Like that's massive, right? And then maybe you're going to strengthen that muscle and you're going to be able to do more. But it is, I saw it at Aniwa. Mm. I saw people from the deep Amazon, people from New Zealand, people from Switzerland, people from Africa, people from right here on
and
this
some
land.
Who have big followings on Instagram.
Exactly. Some social media influencers,
yeah,
some, you know, nomadic hippies, mm-hmm, some people who went back to their job at JP Morgan today, you know, people who took time off of their 9-to-5 traditional paradigm work to come and to see the looks on these elders' faces as they recognized each other, right? Mm. And the, you know, we held space for them it wasn't even necessarily about us, right? We witnessed, I think that's a better word to say, is this recognition of, wow, I've never met you before. I've been holding it down. I've been fighting for my people. I've been speaking my truth for some of these people 90 years old, right? First, second, third time on a plane, coming to Massachusetts of all places, very close to where the original colonization of North America happened, to meet each other and to see and to feel the recognition and the love for each other, and then to also look at the rest of us and to love us completely and to trust us fully to receive what they were bringing, right? Without doubting our capacity. There was just this gratitude that we had all decided to be there to stake this claim to a world that really does truly honor our humanity. Mm. and that deep, deep sense to bring it full circle of why we feel so outraged. Because we know how good it can be.
Aaron, thank you so, so much for everything you shared today.
Thank you.
And for all your work in the world. I'm so grateful to know you. And for anybody listening, I'll share all of Aaron's links and details so you can find him and connect more deeply with his work. If you're curious about Aniwa and the origins of that festival, my interview a couple of weeks ago was with Vivian Villela, who's the founder of the festival. So she shares more about what it's all about. I can only imagine it's going to get even bigger.
Yes.
In years
You're all
to come.
Invited.
Yeah. Let's, like, I'm going to propose it right now. Mass numinous kind of visit to Aniwa 2020. Whoa, that will be powerful against the backdrop of the presidential race next
year.
Yes.
And just, there's many prophecies about 2020 as well. We'll put those in the footnotes of another episode. But if you,
yeah,
if you
we'll
feel the resonance
too.
Of, whoa, this is a big time.
Yeah.
It is.
It is.
And you're invited to co-create this future together.
You're not only invited, you already RSVP and you didn't even know it. So welcome to the party. Get involved. We love you. Thank you for being here, everybody. Aaron, thank you again. And I'll speak to you soon.
Thank you so much, Ruby.
These are the kind of conversations I want to be having all the time. So I just want to say thank you again to everyone who's listening to this podcast and giving me a reason to speak with people like Aaron Rose about the things that I see as being really important in the world, and helping spread messages like Aaron's. This is a quick PSA to let you guys know I'm going to be taking a bit of a break from recording podcasts for a couple of months in the summer. I'll be bringing it back in the fall. And don't worry, there are a few more episodes of the Now Age podcast to come before I take that break. But in the meantime, I'd love to receive any feedback from you about interviews you've loved, about people you would love to hear me speak to, about topics you would like me to find people to speak on. Please DM me on Instagram, either at The Numinous or at Ruby Warrington, which is my personal account where I post more of my personal stuff and have more time really to respond to DMs and things like that. But thank you again for being here. Entering the world of podcasting has felt like a really natural progression for my work as a writer and a speaker and a disseminator of ideas. So thank you for being here, and I'll see you again soon. This podcast features original music and is edited by alloaudio.com, www.aloeaudio.com.